Moncrief on News Talk.
Time to look outside our very rich borders today to other parts of the world. Jonathan De Burka Butler joins us once again. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you doing?
Right, Estonia we're going to go to first. This is an odd story. Are they essentially going to be renting out prison spaces to other countries?
This is what's being discussed, shall we say. Now, it's interesting because the source of this story, or the reason for this story, really comes from the UK. So I don't know if you've seen, but they've got a bit of an overcrowding crisis in prisons there in England and Wales at the moment, right? So this week, the government is releasing about 3,000 prisoners from jails under a temporary scheme, right? So they're basically prisoners that are serving custodial sentence of less than 4 years will be eligible for release after 40% of their terms are completed instead of 50% of their term being completed, right? And The Telegraph is the newspaper that broke this story about Estonia, right? And they were kind of breaking the story about Estonia in tandem with this new policy that the Labour government were doing, because I suppose Telegraph maybe want to highlight bad things that the Labour government are doing or potentially problematic things. So they had this story that Estonia were in discussions with the UK Justice Secretary Shabana Mahmood at a summit about renting out spaces in jails in Estonia. And the reason that this was feasible is because it's such a safe country and there's hardly any crime. And there's one particular prison that representatives of the government have gone to visit called Tartu Prison, which is almost empty because of those low levels of crime. And the justice minister in Estonia, Liisa Pakosta is her name, said that the government is considering maybe renting out spaces, and they had inquiries from various European countries. So not just the UK.
Just the UK.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, the response from the UK government, the current UK government, was, OK, well, this isn't our policy. This was a policy that the Conservatives kicked off and they sent representatives to go over and have a look at. But they did admit that Labour government representatives had also gone over to have a look. But they were only discussing things at this stage. And as far as the Justice Minister in Estonia is concerned, they had general discussions about prison systems and justice systems, and there was no discussion whatsoever about renting out prisons necessarily to the UK.
Right.
Nothing's been signed.
Right. Or any other country? Because presumably they've had these kind of vague general discussions with other countries too.
So no deals have been done as of yet, right?
Yeah.
And the Justice Minister in Estonia, in fairness to her, she's quite savvy in the way she puts things across. She's pointed out, you know, we haven't actually even decided if, on our side, if this is going to be a policy. It's not that you can just come in here and sort of say, we want to rent your prison, give it to us.
Yeah.
We have to decide if we're going to do it. But she said that the prisons in Estonia seem to be cheaper to run, and they reckon that they could make something like 13 million euros out of it a year if they do rent them.
Okay.
So it'd be handy money, although if you want a load of, you know, British prisoners going over to your country and being housed there, I don't know if that's desirable.
Yeah. And is the crime rate in Estonia particularly low?
It must be, judging by the fact that it's not just this prison that's almost empty, but several other prisons are virtually empty as well.
Yeah.
So they have the space, apparently, and it must be a great place to
live. Maybe they should go over there and ask them that question. Right, let's go to the US next. And two brothers from Nigeria have been jailed for a sextortion case. What were they doing?
Yeah, So what were they doing? Well, it's your classic sextortion case. You know, we've covered one or two stories in the past on this. I think we did one back in March or April about a young fellow in Australia who died by suicide as a result of sextortion from the same country, Nigeria. But what's interesting about this particular case is that it's the first time that the two people have been brought from Nigeria to the United States and have been convicted and sent to prison. So these two boys, to answer your question, are called the Ogosi brothers, Samuel, who's 24, and Samson Ogosi. And it all happened very quickly. I think it was in 2023, early 2023, when they got in touch with a young man, 17-year-old from Michigan, by the name of Jordan DeMay. And they pretended to be a pretty girl and they started talking to each other. And this seemingly pretty girl managed to convince Jordan DeMay to send pictures that you wouldn't send your grandmother.
Okay.
Naked pictures or whatever they might be. And then, of course, these Ogosi brothers, they revealed themselves and they tried to get money out of them. And they were successful, but it wasn't enough. So they tried to get more. And then Jordan DeMay, the 17-year-old kid from Michigan, basically said, look, I don't have any more money to give you. And if you spread these images, I'm going to kill myself. To which they replied, good, do that fast or we'll make you do it. And he went ahead and did it. And the whole thing took 6 hours. 6 hours from the time that he engaged with this seemingly pretty girl to the time that he died. His father found him dead in his bedroom as a result of all of this. Extraordinary.
Oh, gosh. And was he their only victim?
No, he wasn't their only victim. Now, in the sense that he wasn't the only victim who died by suicide.
Mm-hmm.
They did have other victims. I think there was 38 in total. 13 of them were minors, apparently. And what's interesting about this case is two things about it. The US authorities went over to Nigeria, got them arrested and got them extradited back to the US, right? They admitted to what they had done. But what's interesting about it is, even though they apologized to the parents at the end and when they were handed down their sentences, the judge noted that they were aware that this young man had killed himself or had died by suicide. Okay, but they continued were doing. Hence the heavy sentences, which are 17 and a half years each.
Yeah. Is there a lot of this kind of fraud based in Nigeria?
Yeah, there seems to be, without wishing to be, you know, tarring everybody with the same brush or whatever it is. But there does seem to be a concentration of this type of thing, particularly in Lagos. There was that case in Australia that I spoke to you about. There's another case that the British authorities are looking into about a 16-year-old called Murray Dowie, who died by suicide at the end of December last year. And there's two other men on trial in Lagos as we speak, in connection with a 15-year-old in the US and a 14 or 15-year-old in Canada as well. So if we take it that there's four cases that we know of.
Yeah.
I think they're kind of concentrating. And they even, you know, the authorities in Nigeria, they'd admitted themselves that it's a problem. And so, you know, a couple of comments from commentators within Nigeria have said they're kind of happy about this, these two going down for 17 and a half years, because they think it might be a lesson to others to get them to stop. Because it seems to be predominantly very young men who are involved in this. And they think they're not really harming anybody. But of course, they absolutely are.
In the worst possible way. Mm. Right. Brazil, we're going to go to next. Certainly a case of hiring totally the wrong person for a particular job. This being the equality minister.
Yeah.
What is the equality minister doing?
Yeah, this is the human rights minister. Is Silvio Almeida. He's 48-year-old. He's been an ally of Lula's for quite a while. Been in the cabinet since Lula came back in early, when was it, 2023, I think. He's been back for a while now. And apparently Me Too, the Me Too movement in Brazil, had received complaints of sexual misconduct by Almeida. Now, you think to yourself, okay, this is a man, he's a minister, he's a man in power, so it's probably his personal assistants and that kind of thing. That's the kind of the image I think a lot of people would have.
Mm.
But I think what's surprising about this is that the allegations, or at least one of the allegations, have been made by a fellow minister. So this is the Brazilian racial equality minister, Aniele Franco, whose own sister actually was assassinated. She was a councillor in Rio de Janeiro and she was assassinated back in 2018. Very famous case. So she'd be very well known, this person, Aniele Franco. And she's made a complaint against him, as well as a professor and a city council candidate from São Paulo as well. So it's interesting. I think the people who are making the complaints are colleagues.
That's extraordinary.
I don't think you'd expect it. So he's been fired, as you'd expect. But he intends to fight his case in the courts, of course.
But is there any kind of formal investigation going on into it?
Yeah,
as well?
Lula has said that a formal investigation has been launched and he acted very quickly in this regard.
Yeah. Right. Controversial move by a mayor in Italy to ban cricket.
Yeah.
Or, on the other hand, they play cricket in Italy?
Well, I don't think Italians are big into it.
Yeah.
But in this particular town, it's interesting because it's a place called Malfalcone, right? So it would be up in the northeast, I think, near Trieste. And a population of about 30,000. But of that 30,000, about 10,000 are Bangladeshis.
Right.
They're the ones who are playing cricket. All right, or who are trying to play cricket.
Right, okay.
So what happened here was that this town is not particularly significant only for the fact that it has the biggest shipyard in Europe. And in the early 1990s, there was a recruitment drive and that concentrated on Bangladesh. Now, I don't know whether they have certain skills in Bangladesh to bring them over, but anyway, that's why there's so many there.
Okay.
Right? That influx, shall we say, I would like to pick a better word, but let's go with it now, of people from Bangladesh has caused tensions in this particular town. And the relatively recently elected mayor, Anna Maria Chisant, who is a member of the Lega party, okay, it used to be the Lega Northern, they just called it the Lega party, has decided to try and push back against this influence of Islam as she sees it, right? So a couple of the steps that she's taken is she's removed the park benches that these hordes of people from Bangladesh were gathering on to drink mint tea and talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And she has also decided to not allow collective prayer from happening anymore in the town. But the biggest controversy, or the one that has got a lot of tension, is the fact that she's not allowing cricket to be played in the centre of town. Now, she's saying that it's not an Italian thing, right? It's not part of their culture.
Yeah.
She's also saying that it's quite dangerous, and she might have a bit of a point there. It is quite a hard ball. But that the money isn't there to build a pitch for them. So she's fining people who are now playing cricket in this town and in an effort to try and stop it. And of course, the people who want to play the cricket are saying this has nothing to do with the fact that the game is unsafe. It's to do with the fact that it's being played by Bangladeshis.
And these Bangladeshis, they were recruited into the country to work there.
Essentially,
didn't come off a boat in the Mediterranean or anything.
I can't say for sure if all of them did or didn't. But I think that from what I gather is that there was a recruitment drive. I'll put it this way. For one of the pieces, when I was looking into this, the director of the shipyard is basically saying, we need these people to come here and work.
Yes.
So he's not unhappy that they're there because they are keeping the town going as far as he's concerned. And they're certainly keeping his shipyard going, which, as I said, is the biggest in Europe.
Yeah. Is Italy facing kind of a shortage of workers in general?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I mean, when I lived there, as people are probably sick of hearing at this stage, but when I was leaving Rome about 20 years ago, there was more people dying than there were being born.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think last year they had less than 400,000 babies, and the ratio is, I think it's 1.2 babies for every woman in Italy, and it should be well above two, as far as I know, for replacement.
Yes. Yeah.
Just to keep the population going.
But they are. I mean, even Meloni's government is issuing more permits to non-EU workers to come in and work.
Yeah. So, and she had sort of. Part of her shtick was, we don't want these foreigners
on that,
here.
On that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, okay, Indonesia we're going to go to finally. And I suppose this is a trend we're seeing all over. We've seen it in many places in Europe. They're going to stop building hotels in Bali.
Yes, they have. In Indonesia said that it's going to suspend the construction of new hotels in some areas of Bali. Now, I don't know how you can sort of say some areas of Bali, because Bali's
big,
tiny.
Yeah.
It's the size of Galway. But part of the indicative of the problem is the fact that already in the first half of the year, they've had 2.9 million visitors into the island, right? It's quite extraordinary. Now, everybody knows that it's got a great reputation for you go there and kind of get wasted and you have a good time, that kind of thing. But not everybody's happy about that. I think Indonesia as a whole is kind of going through a bit of, it's becoming a bit more conservative.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to get that balance right between tourists and the people who are actually from there. So they've said, OK, for now, we're going to stop the building of hotels. There's too many of them, and we're at risk of over-tourism and ruining the place completely.
Yeah, because I mean, suppose it's a long way from us, but Bali is like Spain for Australians.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Very popular with Australians.
They're all kind of jumping around the place. AC Milan apparently was founded by Milan Football and Cricket Club in 1899 by English expatriate Herbert Kilpin.
I did not know that.
Know that either. Thank you, listener, for letting us know about that. So what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Yeah, there's obviously tonight or tomorrow morning, the presidential elections.
Of course,
debate is the big thing. So we wake up to lots of snippets of that in the morning, I would say. Then tomorrow is, of course, September the 11th.
Of course, yes.
Do you remember where you were, if we have time?
I remember I was on a dart.
Right.
And somebody texted me. Or phoned me and said, a plane has flown by accident into one of the Twin Towers, but they have live pictures of it. And then coming home and then turning on the TV. And even by the time I got home, it was obvious that it wasn't an accident at all.
It was a crazy day. Absolutely. Sunday then, Prince Harry turns 40. And on the same day as World Afro Day.
Coincidence? I think not. Jonathan, thanks a million, as
thanks,
ever.
Sean.
Jonathan de Burke, a butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.